So tonight's Dharma discussion, in lieu of the holiday season, is about anger. And when Rich first proposed doing a series on the discursive emotions, we found it funny nobody included anger, because that's usually one of the first things that comes up, since it's an emotion that everybody deals with. So I'm going to attempt to deal with it tonight. And as usual, I prefer a Dharma discussion. So if you have something to add or you disagree with anything I've said, it's just my opinion, raise your hand, let me know. Let me know what you want to offer. Happy to hear it and learn from you as well. So first question, anybody been angry this week? Wow. I thought everybody be shy. And no, not me. Okay. All right, so anybody want to share what they were angry at? Huh? Come on. Okay, thank you.
Our alternative energy provider isn't providing the energy they said they were going to provide. It has been a 5-month interaction with this agency, and it's rather unpleasant. So that's been my anger and frustration.
Okay. Great, thank you. Anybody else have an anger thing going on back there? Yeah.
My wife and I have a little dog. Janice knows the little dog. It's very cute. It's like a fox, a rescue dog. Mm-hmm. And our pet sitter was supposed to just stop by when we were gone in August to take care of the dog and walk her. Instead of doing that, took our dog without our permission to her house and lost it. And then she refused to, she was very bad about doing things, and she didn't want to spend money. I mean, long story short, she was just zero customer service. So anyway, we had to sue her to collect the money that we could probably found the dog. Through no help of her, but through our own efforts. We sue her, and then she shows up in court today, and her defense was just trying to character assassination. How horrible my wife and I are. I'm sure maybe we are in some people's hearts. But we think we're wonderful. I was telling Janice here, just like my lawyers talk about their inner Mongo. There's a Mongo that lives inside you. You have to keep it controlled. But today my inner Mongo was just, whoa. It was going. My wife was like, thank God. So finally, I just settled down and
anyway. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I hope you feel a little bit better after sharing that. Laura.
I got a polite email telling me that the warranty on my printer was expiring and I had paid for an extended warranty through the end of 2018.
That's aggravating. Okay. Good. Anybody else? Yes?
I do some volunteer work at a medical facility downtown. And this morning, two women came in. One said she was a social worker. Said this woman is very sick, needs some attention. Told the person that began to help her that she needed a wheelchair. The guy went to get the wheelchair, came back. The social worker was gone. Turned out that the woman she left was a woman who was dying of AIDS because she was refused to take her medicine, but basically this woman was just dumped. And I wanted to find out. Someone did claim that yes, she was a real social worker and an age, but wouldn't say what age they wanted to go.
Right. Well, that's distressing. Yeah.
And I'm afraid my anger was political, and that's pretty useless anger unless you can channel it into action.
But we'll be talking about that.
It was definitely an up and down week for helping
the
bee
going.
Oh,
yeah. Thank you. Robin?
I'm just going to say this word and see if anybody else feels this way. I'm going to say the word Comcast.
Okay. Yes.
I have a related word, Amazon.
Well, there's a lot of pent up anger in
here.
Par for the course, and sometimes it even gets exacerbated over the holiday season when we're supposed to be feeling very generous towards each other and feel this sense of joy and happiness, and these things happen, and it even intensifies it. So anger in Buddhist practice is one of the three states that leaves us in a state of suffering. Three states. So you know one. What are the other two?
Attachment.
Greed and delusion.
That's right, greed and delusion. So if you look up there on that tanka, it's the tanka of dependent origination, which just shows how things happen. Each thing is dependent on the next, but right in the middle of it are three animals. And the three animals are a pig, a rooster, and a snake. And the rooster stands for greed, wanting, grasping, wanting more of something. And that's lobha in Pali. The snake is dosa, and that is hatred, ill will, not wanting it that way. And then moha is delusion, and that is the pig. So those three represent the states that keep us in a state of suffering. In our tradition, they're called the three kalesas. The three kalesas. It's where everything starts in this realm of samsara, this realm of when we experience suffering. So tonight we're going to focus on dosa, ill will, anger. It's kind of got a continuum. You know, even talking about some of your anger tonight over things, some is fairly mild and some is really ramped up. And there is a continuum, although it's still on the ill will spectrum. Mm-hmm. And this is interesting. The antidote to, what would you think the antidote to ill will, dosa, what do you think it would be? What would be the opposite?
Loving kindness.
Loving kindness, right. But it's not. It's a mistranslation. It's non-hate. So hate is that arena of suffering of the three kalesas. Non-hate. Didn't say love. It's non-hate. So it's been translated as love, and I'm going to go into that in a little bit as well. So, what exactly is anger? Actually, in Buddhist psychology and in psychology in general, it's called a secondary emotion. Anger comes from primary emotions, which could be fear, feeling disrespected, unrepresented, you know, you name it. All these emotions that come up that, because it happens so quickly, anger appears. But generally, anger is not the primary emotion. It's a secondary emotion. So, with that, I want to know, have any of you ever looked at anger when it came up and saw where it emanated from? Saw that it was not anger, it was coming from something else. So who could share that? Yes.
It was an incident just in the last couple of weeks. I was riding my bike home from work in the dark on a busy but narrow street, and lots of traffic driving past me, and I had lights on. And that particular day, I'd worn my bright yellow top, and I usually don't wear that, so I thought I was very visible. In fact, I was, but cars were passing by. Usually they stop until there's room to go pass around me if there's no oncoming traffic. And a pickup truck pulled past me without trying to, you know, go into the middle of the road, just let the other cars come. And I thought he was pretty close, but he also had a trailer behind him. And he, once he, there was a he, because my anger allowed me to suffer anger, the second emotion. So when he pulled over, his trailer was really, and it was where there were cars parked and piles of leaves, and I really didn't have any escape. And I was very, very frightened for my well-being. And when I got over the fear, the anger hit me like a bolt, and I rode my bike as fast as I could to catch up with the person to have a word with him. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We won't ask what happened then.
Okay.
Okay, but that's good. You saw that fear. It was slow enough where you could, because oftentimes you don't see it. It's just anger immediately comes up. So it's good that you saw that. Yeah, anybody else? Let's see, the primary emotion before secondary anger. Yeah.
Well, I'm on Obamacare, and I like it because at least, you know, you can't be denied because of pre-existing conditions. That's all great. But the way it is administered is a nightmare. And I spent 6 hours one day on the phone trying to get some refills and some issues straightened out. And in the end, my insurance company's pharmaceutical representatives wanted me to switch from my retail pharmacy here to their mail order pharmacy. And not only did they not want me at the retail pharmacy, they wanted me to switch some medicines to a obviously a cheaper brand. I said, well, do you have my medical charts? And what really got me angry was the lack of respect, treating me like a dummy, and you know, just wasting my time.
Right. Not being seen, not being heard.
Right.
Right. Right. That's a huge cause of anger. Yeah. Anybody else have anything? Yelena?
Well, I think most of the time for me, anger comes up either because of some hurt, something that I experienced as hurtful. Or you know, just stress, fatigue, overwhelm. I think a lot of times, a lot of the anger that I experience, and I think that are sort of rampant in our culture, have to do with people just being stressed, pressured.
Right. Well, hurt, sadness, and fear are said to be the three primary emotions from which anger comes, and you've all mentioned that already, you know. And so then it manifests, and we know the various ways it can manifest. We're all different personalities, so anger will come out in different ways. So for some of you, maybe it's chasing after the car and giving him your peace of mind. For others of us who are more passive aggressive, me, it's more just going inwards, you know, and punishing yourself and suffering the consequences of that.
I have a question about that. When it goes inward, do you realize that you're experiencing anger, or is that something, because I think I'm relating to what you're saying, and I think oftentimes what happens for me is that it comes out later in unexpected ways.
For me, I do know, but I think maybe it's just after practicing a while, you recognize this is what's taking place. But it took a while to recognize that. You know, it was just that inner punishment and then realizing this is really anger. It's very clearly. And the Buddha, speaking of that, you know, do you remember there used to be an anger therapy and it was for kids, and they were to take pillows, and they're supposed to smash them all over the place and get the anger out. And this was supposed to be very good at the time, 20, 25 years ago or something. The Buddha said no to that, by the way. All it does is perfect anger. You get better at it, but it's not going to take care of it. It's not going to take care of that primary emotion. You're just going to be acting out. And you're going to be continuing suffering. And then on the other hand, the internalized way, I'm not going to talk about it, I'm not going to do anything, I'll pretend it won't happen, that's not helpful either. Health problems, all kinds of issues come up by internalizing it. So again, we're in the middle way, and the Buddha said to investigate it with mindfulness. And that's what I really want to talk about in just a minute. I see, and this is me talking, just observation, I think there's three types of anger, the type that we direct at ourselves. We're disappointed in ourselves. We start telling ourselves what a fool we are for doing this or that, or how could I have screwed up on that. And it's very easy, you know, to start that storyline going. And then we can get angry at others, perceived fear, perceived insults. And then there's the anger that Robin was talking about and Margaret were talking about, is the anger at injustice. And I'm going to go into that in a little bit. So the Buddha, the way he dealt with anger was, are you suffering now in this state of mind? Is there suffering going on? Is this state of mind causing harm to yourself or others, both physically and possibly mentally? And when we can start admitting that and seeing that, that is starting to investigate our anger. That is starting to deal with it. As long as we keep it subdued and it's not taking place and I'm better than that and I don't get angry at that, that's not going to happen. And here's the weird thing about anger, and maybe some of you can really identify with it. Anger is addicting. It's an addicting state. I actually looked this up and found out there are addicted to anger sites. People who really want to be angry.
Wow.
And if you've ever noticed, when you really get into a role of anger, and you know you've been perhaps annoyed at someone, that person who annoys you, and you know everything about them just bothers you. It's not just that annoys you. You start making up things to exacerbate it, to make that anger even more intense. And I had this happen with my mother. Died this year in February, and she had dementia for the last 3 years of her life. And so she would act out. She would yell at me, and you know, things would happen, and it was very uncomfortable. So when I wasn't with her, I started making up stories about this is what's going to happen next time I see her. And I already amped up my mood for when I saw her, so I was going in already on the defensive, fear-based, afraid of being embarrassed in public by her, those kind of things. And she could have been in having a very good day, but I'm ramped up. I'm expecting the worst. I'm causing the problem at that point. In prison, men talk about this all the time, how anger is powerful. If they're angry, they're in control. And if they're not in control, they'll make up stories to get themselves angry so they are in control. Yeah.
The person that I was angry at was the political person is clearly an anger addict. And the people who support him become addicted to hatred and anger too.
Right.
And we're just watching it on a national stage. And
I wonder who you're talking about. Thank you for your discretion. No, we don't. Okay, so, and we can do this towards others, we can do it towards ourselves. You just watch that addicting quality. I know when I did this with my mother and I started ramping up, thank goodness for this practice, I saw what I was doing. I actually stopped and said, that's not true. None of that happened. I'm sitting here making this stuff up to justify my anger at her for having dementia. I'm going to up the ante and make it so I'm a martyr. I'm a martyr in this situation. And when I saw that, it was, oh man, talk about delusion staring you right in the face. There it was. So, is anger always bad? is it not bad? When is it? That's right. Justifiable anger. The problem with justifiable anger is you're walking a fine line. As soon as it turns into hate, you have lost control. But justifiable anger, where you see there's an action that can take place where you can help alleviate harm, that's huge. That's how things get better. But you can't roll over into hate, ever. That's when you've completely lost control. So anger can be a force for good. In Buddhism, there is what's called hiri-atopa, and it's fear of moral dread and fear of moral shame. And this is what keeps societies hopefully moving in the right direction, us as people moving in the right direction. Becoming angry with ourselves when we're not being, we're not following the precepts, the five precepts, not following ethical action. So have any of you, Margaret just gave an example, any of you experienced justifiable anger and did anything about it, worked with it? Can you give me an example?
I filed a grievance at my employment, Kaiser, some years ago when they denied health care to my overage disabled dependent. And I won.
Great.
And it was quite a battle. Right. But I did beat Kaiser. And not only that, I believe, I was told later by some new employees who had disabled family members that they did not suffer what I had gone through. I think I caused Kaiser to change their policy.
Fantastic. Wow. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And that is... justifiable anger, taking action. Joanna Macy, great Buddhist activist, said, action absorbs anxiety. So if you can do something, you see a wrong and you can actually do something about it, it helps you and it helps everybody else. Mm-hmm. Right. Anybody else? Yeah.
I think this is an okay example. I had a neighbor across the street. She was a single mom, and she had a disabled adult child and a really wonderful high school-aged son. And she had a brother who was a drug addict, and he would come over to her house and harass her. And one day he was confronting her in the street because he was trying to get her to give him some money. She didn't have any money to give him, and he slapped her. And I just walked over there. It may not have been the best thing to do, but I didn't know what else to do. I just walked over there and stood next to her, and he sort of backed off.
Wonderful, wonderful. That's a great example of justifiable anger.
Yeah, I was very angry when I saw what he was treating.
Antoine, you had an example?
Yeah, I go again with the anger. in 2013, police officer, West Sacramento, ran into my wife's car. The driving officer, the reporting officer, lied on the collision report. And the insurance carrier refused to pay. So I was, needless to say, a little bit miffed. So I hauled the city of West Sacramento into court. And these guys went scorched earth. They brought in their tall building lawyers, they went scorched earth, but long story short, I'm not a trial lawyer, I'm a horrible trial lawyer. But anyway, this other attorney jumps into the case because West Sac police shot his partner and almost killed him, his law partner. And the guy sends a letter to West Sacramento Police Department's attorney and says, I look forward to deposing your officers and exposing them for the liars that they are. Mm-hmm. They settled within 24 hours for $3,000 more than my original demand. Mm-hmm. But that was, I'm still angry about that. I should stop.
That's excellent. Excellent. Yeah, Brian.
I'm a little confused, actually. Can you help me?
Sure.
Suffering from anger and rageaholic issues has been a huge part of my practice. This word justifiable anger doesn't sit with me. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm justifying my behavior or judging some political we're judging. And as a rageaholic, as an anger person, I got to watch out for. So I don't know where the line is between justifying my anger, you know, and being, you know, I don't know, I get confused, I guess, as the examples are being used. It's okay in some circumstances, and in others it's, and for me, I've learned to use my anger as an indicator that something's off inside, and I felt something else, and to go underneath that layer and to get away from the anger so it doesn't go into rage.
Right.
But
I think a better description might be anger at injustice rather than justifiable anger. And anger at injustice, I think, is when you see suffering happening for really no other reason than somebody else's gain. And, you know, I'll use prison as an example. I was angry at the injustice that was taking place within prison. Unnecessary suffering. Suffering that was perpetuated for no apparent reason. And so I look to take action. But if anger turns to rage with no action behind it to undo suffering, you're going to suffer, and you know that. You know what you're capable of. So
I guess for me, the word anger and justified, and maybe what you're saying is what's underlying the anger. Like, I hear if somebody's getting slapped, that's not anger. That's like a human reaction to protecting or something. It's not anger like I understand anger.
Yeah, I think anger at injustice is just a better way of looking at it. Laura, you wanted to say something?
Well, I really appreciate what you're saying, and maybe that got at most of my question. I had a similar thing that I was sitting with, which is, clearly, if there's injustice from a dharmic standpoint, it calls for action, or if there's skillful action, it calls for action. But I wondered whether, as long as there is anger, even if the anger is quote-unquote justified, whether if I hold anger, I'm still burned by the anger. And so it's actually, I had raised my hand before Brian finished what he was saying, but whether it's the sorrow or the compassion, you know, whether the kind of wholesome action comes from something deeper, but whether the anger per se is ever wholesome. And I don't know the answer, but I had a similar sense of, do I ever not get burned by it?
When anger, my feeling, and maybe Rich can add to this or somebody else, I think when anger is out of control, when it has turned into hatred, it's no longer serving anybody. But anger that is looking at an injustice under control can be, I think, can lead to social good. Rich,
I was just thinking about that story that's told about the Dalai Lama when he first came here, and a young man at one of his speeches, put up his hand and said, "We need to take the streets and, you know, do whatever it takes to take on China about the issue of Tibet." And the Dalai Lama told him, "Come back when your anger is gone." So I think that anger can be a healthy motivating factor to decide to leave the status quo and to move out of this sort of lethargy that a lot of us have around social issues because they're so overwhelming. But I think before we actually take action, it's going to be a lot more likely to be skillful if that anger has cooled down and we've kind of connected with, well, what is it really, what's this injustice really about, rather than going into the action kind of fueled by anger.
Yes, I totally agree with you. Yeah. Back here, Ryan?
Yeah, I agree with what Rich was saying as well. Maybe it's just my own personal training or history, but I think when the anger is there, I do think sometimes it can be so powerful that it has to be kind of ramped down before you can work with it in some sort of meditative way.
Right.
And going into like social projects I think is really dangerous, or even thinking about social issues. And a lot of what has worked for me has just been really simple, like manual labor tasks, where you're moving mm-hmm. to try and get to dissipate the anger, and then try and come back with a more balanced mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. Have you read Gil Fronsdale's Mad to Madless? It's very, very good, and it goes into directly at what you're talking about, and it's a way of working from anger to investigating it, being mindful about it. And as I recall, M was for motivation, actually looking, is there power behind this? Am I trying to accomplish something with this? A was attention, actually looking at how is it manifesting in the body and the mind? D is for dissipation. So doing something till you have control. Do something else. And Gil said, go for a walk, go out into nature. You're not denying the anger, but the energy is so ramped up at that point, you're not going to be useful to anybody by tackling anything. L was learn. What is the secondary, what's the primary emotion that's taking place? Learn from it. E was empathy for the person that's angry at you. You've been in that place too. S is what story are you telling yourself? I told you I was attenuating my anger by telling more stories. And the final one, S, was to speak and share. You know, once you're under some control, actually speak and share what's been taking place. You know what, I'm going to find that and ask Brian to put it up on the website, because I think it's a wonderful essay. And he goes into all these things that we need to be working on before we get to the antidote of anger, which is what?
Non-anger,
non-hate, metta, which is non-hate. And I know when I first started learning metta, for those of you who don't know, is one of the Brahma Viharas, one of the four sublime states that should be developed to have a mind that is bordering on freedom. When I first heard about metta and practicing it, it made me mad. And I thought I was the only one, and I was ashamed to admit it. I couldn't anymore sit there going, I wish you would be safe and protected and peaceful and happy. When I was ramped up, I couldn't do it. And there didn't seem to be any other way of dealing with it at the time. Just keep saying this over and over again. It made me mad. I actually spoke to a friend of mine who was talking about his teacher, and he was saying his teacher had the exact same reaction. In fact, one time at Spirit Rock went running out because his anger level had ramped up to such a degree he was afraid what he was going to do. And I thought, well, good. I'm not so weird after all. And what I had to find was cultivating ways in everyday life to start generating this open heart and getting over anger. It was the only way I could work with it. Now metta is a regular practice, but as Gil said in one of his talks, if you're not practicing with metta all the time, don't bother trying to use it to alleviate anger. It's not going to work. And you can. This is why this Mad to Madless essay, which I think is so good, you need to work with it in everyday life. One of the advantages of going into prison is you have to be very creative in presenting these kind of topics. You can't just say, okay, you're going to sit and you're going to recite, may you be safe and protected, may you be peaceful and happy as you're being threatened out in the yard, with a shank or something like that. You have to come up with a different strategy. I just spent 4 days in prison. It's the longest period where I've gone every day, and all we talked about was this topic. So it's kind of on top of my mind. And one thing I want to share is We were talking about the Brahmaviharas, and each of the Brahmaviharas has its opposite. It's called the far enemy. So for metta, boundless friendliness, the far enemy is anger or hate. For compassion, karuna, the far enemy is cruelty. For sympathetic joy, the far enemy is jealousy. For upeka, equanimity, the far enemy is indifference. So we were talking about these. I had them memorize them, just kind of scholarly, and then said, I want you to start working with them. So next time you feel the far enemy of one of these come up, I want you to come up with a creative way of working with it. I'm not going to give you a way of working with it. You're going to come up with a creative way of working with it. The only example I gave them was looking at if somebody's angry at you, could you look at them as if they have a mental illness? Could you look at anger as a mental illness? Would you go screaming and yelling and being angry back at someone who is mentally ill? No, what would you do? And they all said, no, I'd be patient, try to talk to him, get him some help. I said, well, that's one way of starting to look at it so you are not caught up in that same situation. So I'm going to tell you to, I sent this all out to the folks in prison. Two samples that they gave last night at Dual Vocational Institute, and one guy was saying he had been so looking forward to his wife visiting. They apparently have family visits, their conjugal visits, and they're in an apartment outside the prison. I had no idea this happened, but for people who are trustees, who are, have proven themselves to not cause any problems in the prison, they're awarded this. So he was very happy to be seeing his wife soon, and he was in his cell waiting 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, nothing. He's supposed to be there at 10, and he is now ramping up. He said he is so mad. He was so disappointed. He was so looking to see his wife, who he only gets to spend time with every 6 months. And he said he started reflecting on upeka, equanimity. And here's what he thought. He said, you know what? The air I'm breathing here is the same air I would be breathing if I was out there. The food I'm eating here is the food I would be eating out there. The only difference is now I'm just grasping onto this idea of what makes me happy, and I'm not allowing myself to be happy in this moment. And he said, all of a sudden, he didn't feel so bad. His heart was opening with this experience. And he had made it up himself. He had devised a way of working with this. There was 13 men in this group. Everybody had similar stories. And the second one that I'll relate had to do with a guy he's a lifer. And he said when he came into prison, everybody he came in with is now gone. And he resents that. And his family is dying. All that's left in his family now is his father. And he was sitting around. Another relative had died, and he was feeling awful, just awful. And he said, anger was coming up. Why me? Why am I never on parole? Why am I never released? I do everything I'm supposed to do. My family's dying. My dad's all I have left. And he saw the anger that was present, and he saw how much suffering he was in. And he thought, you know, even people on the outside are losing people. Everybody's losing people. We can't stop it. He said, why should I be suffering any more or less than anyone else? And he said he felt compassion come up when he started thinking that way. I think that's the way you develop the Brahmaviharas and metta, is starting to work in your life, looking at what registers with you. And after that, you can start working with metta, you know, in your meditation, actually cultivating this open heart that you have developed in this instance, and start using that as your core for wishing everyone well. Another practice I have in prison, I just started a month ago is every time we check in and go around the circle, I want every person to tell me, what act of kindness did you commit today or yesterday or this week? Or, and at first, they would say, I didn't commit any act of kindness. And then they would stop and think, every single one of them had, but they forgot. They think so little of themselves that they forget that they are kind to each other. One guy said, I haven't committed an act of kindness, I can't remember when. And three other people said, you gave me top ramen soup yesterday because you said you had enough and you didn't need to keep it. Another guy said, don't you remember you gave me your sweatshirt? I was cold when I forgot. They forget. We forget what it is to have an open heart. And if we can remember, that is as good a cure for anger as you can possibly have. I'm big on this metta not being love because I don't think we are capable of loving everybody. That's my own opinion. Unless you are completely, totally awakened and can see every living being as formerly your mother or your sister or your child, I don't think it's possible. But I think we can wish people non-harm. We can wish them ease, wish them best in their life. I think that's possible for every one of us. And that's how I prefer to train when I use metta. And very briefly, because I just finished reading the Inalio book for the second time, the original way of doing metta was not with the five categories. Those of you who practice metta know this. It was radiating metta. It was developing this inner being. As I just mentioned, that some of these inmates are starting to cultivate right in the middle of your heart. And without judgment, without categories, without yourself, this or them, it's just radiating boundless friendliness to every living being. That's hopefully where we will end up at some point with our anger, where we're willing to do that. But in the meantime, we can look for creative ways for cultivating it. And then I'll leave you with this, with Oscar Wilde. Always forgive your enemies. Nothing annoys them so much. So, if you have any comments or you want to state your piece or anything, feel free to. Anything to offer? You're right.
I'll fess up on myself. I got really angry that UPS wasn't ringing our doorbell, you know? And so I was laying in wait for them because I was going to catch them this time. And they did push my button and it turned out my ding-donger was broken. So I was like, oops. Don't take yourself too
seriously. Thank you very much. Yeah, Robin.
I remember way, way back, Ram Dass used to put on his altar, his spiritual altar, the photograph or something that depicted the particular person that Margaret liked, the du jour, the du jour person. And I think it was McNamara way back when, the first time I heard him say that. But he would put it on his altar and he included them every, when his morning practice. And I've done that. I haven't always remembered to do that, but I think it's really helpful. Mm-hmm. And you may have to, you know, incorporate new du jour.
I was just thinking about that as we were.
Yeah.
How would I do that?
I don't know, but we can try, Margaret. We can do it, Margaret.
It's a wonderful practice. Yeah.
I don't know if this is a question, but this is to Brian. These delivery people are really, 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 really stressed this time of year. They literally, I talked to a FedEx delivery person. He told me 150 stops he makes. And the doorbell rings. And by the time I run to the doorbell, he's already in the truck and he started it up. Mm-hmm. So, Brian, you would, if your doorbell worked and you wanted to talk to him or her, you would have to run like, compassion is the reason I'm saying this. Mm-hmm. I talked to him, I said, you must be pretty stressed out. He said, yeah, it is pretty stressful, because he drives a huge truck, narrow streets, and there's traffic is like crazy, people are hurried, so that's a practice right there, driving
that truck. Absolutely, absolutely.
It's like Mother Teresa washing dishes.
I think this every day looking at how can we practice is
right.
So valuable and not stated enough.
That's
so,
what I do. I don't necessarily see all these golden moments here, but it must be running off because I'm seeing it all the time in life.
And you do see it all the time in life. We see, and we, how often are we sitting?
Mm-hmm.
And how often are we engaging in
right.
the world?
It's mostly engaging for me.
That's right. I mean, sitting practice is so important to slow us down so we can see things, but then we're out in the world
mm-hmm.
and we okay. need to see things just as clearly as to what's going on. Yeah.
This may sound strange, but as far as, you know, being able to practice for people you don't know, and
mm-hmm.
I've noticed for a couple of years driving in Sacramento how people you wouldn't expect, how people take out their anger
mm-hmm.
on each other when they're driving. And it's almost like an epidemic, like it's widespread.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I would start using that because I realized I do it too, you know, because I'll react to that
mm-hmm.
when it's happening. And it just seemed like that would be a really good place to...
I completely agree with you, and I use that as well. And what I've been doing is making up stories about what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody else do that?
Yep.
I think that's a wonderful practice. This person is racing to the hospital because his mother is not going to be around much longer, and I'm in the way. And that just, all of a sudden, that anger is, okay, I understand that. I think that's being creative and opening your heart. Yeah.
I give out cookies.
You give out cookies?
Cookies to delivery people.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's...
And candy wallets and, you know, whatever.
Oh.
Nice.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I remember last year at Thanksgiving, the guy who collects the recycle guy, he hugged me because he said nobody has said anything to me today.
Oh,
that was sweet. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you.
Thanks for a great talk, by the way, Diane.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a great topic. When Rich mentioned something about the Dalai Lama, one of the maybe you probably heard the story, but I first heard it, it just blew me away. But with all the monks that had been tortured in China and spent all that time in prison, many of them would get out 15, 20, 25 years later, and His Holiness would invite them to come stay with him. And many of them were pretty damaged from the torture that they went through, and they've heard all these stories of torture. And he always told the monks, whenever you feel like talking about it, I'm here for you. And he let them live with him in his monastery. Mm-hmm. And this one monk came to him one day and wanted to kind of start talking about it. And he started to tell him all these horrendous stories of torture that he had been through while he was in prison. And the Dalai Lama at one point asked him, was there really a point in this many years that you were in prison that you really thought your life, you were in jeopardy? And the monk was quiet for a second. He said, yeah, there was a point where I thought I was going to lose compassion for those that were torturing me.
Yes.
Mm.
Wow.
I love that. Was that just kind of cut to the chase?
Mm.
And then, yeah, that was, you don't forget that story.
Mm.
And I'm not working on that level, by the way. But it shows you how much...
That's an awakened being.
Yeah.
That's
how much we have
goal.
To go.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Michael. Yeah,
Ron. Yeah, just thinking about that and a lot of the stories that people were telling about anger, I think there is kind of a natural compassion that arises when we're feeling pain and we're feeling hurt.
That's right.
And I think the anger in some ways dilutes the response. So a lot of times people have kind of a natural capacity to try and do something really good or to take care of someone or something larger, but there's no clear comprehension.
Yes.
Because of the anger.
That's so well put.
Yeah.
Yep. I was if I was planning on talking longer, I was going to address that, you know, compassion and anger thing. But thank you for bringing that up. All right, well, it is 9 o'clock exactly. So, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart. May you all be safe and protected and peaceful and happy and healthy and strong. May you be at ease and may every one of you become awakened in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. So good night.